Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Dani Gear, filling in for Charity Nebbe. Base jumping, BMX riding, walking on the wings of a plane mid-flight, thrill-seeking of this kind is often thought to be for a younger crowd, one often dominated by men. Author Caroline Paul wants to counter this perception. She does this in her book, Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. In the book, among her subjects is Iowa BMX rider Kitty Weston-Nauer, the oldest female BMX racer in the country. Miss Kitty and Caroline will be at Beaverdale Books in Des Moines Tuesday, April 16th at 6:30 p.m. Beaverdale Books is an underwriter for Iowa Public Radio. Miss Kitty will join me later in the hour, but first, I recorded a conversation with Caroline Paul last week. Caroline, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you for having me on. I'm so excited.
Your most recent book really started with your last book, The Gutsy Girl, which is a New York Times bestseller, was mainly targeted at girls, encouraging them to get into the outdoors and seek adventure. But it also strongly resonated with women. What were you hearing from those readers, particularly those middle-aged and older?
Basically that they had never had an outdoor life. And was it too late to get outside now? Because The Gutsy Girl was all about how getting outside can teach us things like bravery and risk assessment and confidence for girls. And I think that really resonated with parents and with older women who had felt like bravery was not something that they were taught to go forward with.
Right. And you hit the ground running at the beginning of this book. You're immediately breaking rules, or at least an accomplice to breaking rules through a sport called base jumping. It's like skydiving. You use a parachute, but you're jumping from cliffs or bridges, fixed objects. Can you tell that story very, very briefly?
What was the one thing I actually did not do in this book? This book is really a look at fulfilling aging. And it's my own quest as I was about 55. And I looked around and saw that there were no women my age doing the things I was doing, like when I was surfing or when I was on my electric skateboard, or I also fly experimental planes. And I saw a lot of men my age, but no women my age, and a lot of men older too. And I started to wonder about why weren't women out here? Was there something I didn't know? Maybe I should be pulling back. So it's really, this book is a quest about my own aging. So I go on these adventures and I participate in them all the while trying to excavate what part of that adventure really helps us age well as women. I did not base jump because it's considered one of the most dangerous sports in the world, but I was an accomplice to the base jump. But I really want to emphasize that this book is not always about extreme adventure. I had to titrate my own definition of adventure as I went through this book. So yes, I accompany Sean Brokman, who's a grandmother. She's a kindergarten teacher. She's African American. There's like so many stereotypes she was busting as a base jumper. And a base jumper is basically someone who jumps off pretty much anything that's high enough and then free falls and then throws a parachute. I wasn't actually encouraging people to do it, but I saw Sean as an inspiration. And I realized that that's where I wanted to begin. Like, we should be inspired to really reach for our own outdoor adventure.
And you're immediately hit with some of these perceptions as you're entering the gate of this national park. You jump on your own electric skateboard and feel like you're breaking stereotypes yourself immediately. And you do have, like you're kind of hinting at, you do have such a range in this book from, you know, from something as extreme as base jumping to something like bird watching comes quickly after that. So how do you define adventure when you have that range there in this book?
I was so schooled, Dani. I got to say that I went into this, you know, I was a firefighter for many years with San Francisco. I do fly experimental aircraft. I was a whitewater rafter. I've been on many bike packing trips around the world and sea kayaking around the world. So, I mean, my definition of adventure was sort of like it almost sometimes has to kill you. And it certainly is high octane. But I realized that I wanted to cover a wide range of outdoor activities because really I thought it was important that as women we get outside. And so I went bird watching, for instance, with Virginia Rose, who's in a wheelchair and has been since she was 14, because I wanted to see how we could get outside no matter what our physical limitations are. And what I kind of was like, bird watching, not really an adventure, but I'm going to go, you know, do it and interview Virginia because I want to see how we can all get out there. And it turns out bird watching is an adventure. It has all the aspects of an adventure. It's a quest. You know, there's the anticipation before you see the bird. There's the exhilaration. There was a physical vitality of an outdoor activity because we actually, Virginia wheeled and I walked 6 miles. It was a bird-a-thon. So I did cover a wide range here for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And bird watching is a good example of sort of this tie between the outdoors and longevity. What benefits did you find through researching for this book that are tied to aging and spending time in the outdoors?
Well, one of the things that intrigued me is what messages were women getting that they didn't go outside as they aged? And it became clear to me that, you know, the messaging we get is pretty toxic. We're going to be too frail. We're going to be on a cognitive decline really early. And, you know, frankly, we're boring. We don't have a lot of, you know, cultural role models for getting outside and being kind of rad like the men do. I mean, men get Indiana Jones still. He's running through the tombs at 75 years old. So it was clear to me that we were getting messages that said, don't go outside because it's too dangerous for you. And then I found science that said the way we look at our own aging predicts how well we age. So what that means is if you have a negative view of your own aging, if you do think, as the messaging is telling us, that your aging is going to be a time of frailty and cognitive decline, you actually have a chance, a significantly higher chance of a cardiac event earlier and cognitive issues earlier. And the opposite is true. If you have a really optimistic and exploratory view of your own aging, you actually are healthier, happier, and you live 7 years longer. And that was eye-opening for me. And what I realized was that when you get outside, that is a direct rebuke to all this messaging. Because, so for instance, when I went to San Diego to interview some boogie boarders who went in the water, I also thought it wasn't really an adventure because, you know, boogie boarding is a pretty simple sport, but I was interested in how we could just, you know, get women outside and just to have fun, just because getting outside itself is so medicinal. And what I found was that just being in cold water, just having like the purpose of helping other people get out there with you, just making decisions about the waves that are coming in, none of those women felt like they were frail or on a cognitive decline or boring. So it began to dawn on me during the writing of this book that getting outside is a direct rebuke to all this really bad messaging that's not just bad for the way we feel about ourselves, but it's really bad for our health.
And you brought up the boogie boarding group. For those who haven't read the book yet, can you tell us a little bit more about who this group is, who participates in these boogie boarding events?
They call themselves the Wave Chasers, and they're women between 60 and 80 mostly, but there was even a boogie boarder who was 97. And what they do is just meet 3 times a week to do this very simple sport called boogie boarding. For those of you who don't know, it's just basically a floatable cafeteria tray, and you put on your wetsuits because the Pacific Ocean is cold. And in most cases, these women were simply riding the white water. And they even told me, you don't have to be in shape. You don't really have to know anything. You just have to come and be ready to have fun. And I spoke to one woman named Lorraine Voigt, who had no outdoor background at all, when she saw the boogie boarders in the water when she was walking her dog. And she thought, oh, well, maybe I'll try that. It was the pandemic, and she was kind of in an inflection moment in her life. And she loved it. And she told me, basically, boogie boarding changed her life. And that really, I said, really? This simple sport? And what I realized is that what it had done is upended her own expectations of who she could be and what she could do at this later stage. And because she was getting in the big Pacific Ocean and she was being tumbled by waves. And none of that was what she had been told her aging journey would be.
And a huge part of that, too, is community, right?
You know, this is the one of the other aspects that really surprised me about outdoor activities. I went understanding, you know, what we needed as we aged and was really wondering where outdoor activities fit into each, you know, what I call sort of foundational pillars. And there were five of them. So it was purpose, novelty, health, a positive mindset about your own aging, as I came to realize, and also community. These are things that we need as we age, but they tend to fall away. But, you know, so when I went and interviewed Kitty Weston-Naur, who is from Iowa and who you're going to interview soon, she at the time was 74. So I think she's 76 now, 77. But she's the oldest female BMX bike racer. And I went because I was wondering how an individual sport, competitive sport, would sort of fire up our neural systems as we aged or something. You know, I went in each time with a fairly specific idea of what I was going to investigate. And then I came out after each adventure completely sort of had way more understanding of how important it was. And with Miss Kitty, which is her racing moniker, she taught me how to ride a racetrack. And what I started to realize is it wasn't the actual riding of the racetrack that, it offered so much. It offered the physical vitality. It offered the purpose. And it offered the novelty because you keep, as she told me, every time I race, I learn something new. But the community aspect was what really surprised me. People of all ages would come up to Miss Kitty and say hi or ask for advice. And what I realize is that as we age, it's not just the socializing that falls away, but that really deep sense of belonging. And Miss Kitty is an integral part of the BMX racing circuit around the country. So she really epitomizes community.
We have to take a short break, but we'll talk more about that in just a moment. I'm speaking with Caroline Paul, the author of many books, but most recently, Tough Broad. She'll be at Beaverdale Books Tuesday, April 16th at 6:30 p.m. with one of the subjects of her book, Iowan and the oldest BMX racer in the country, Kitty Weston-Naur, who we were just talking about. We'll be back in just a moment. It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com. This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including Above and Beyond Cancer.
We're back with Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Dani Gear, sitting in for Charity Nebbe. Back to my conversation with Caroline Paul, the author of a book called Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. And before the break, we were just talking about Kitty Weston-Naur, the oldest female BMX racer in the country. She is one of the many subjects in your book, Caroline, and you were really touching at how much community building she does. But first, I want to know, what drew you to Miss Kitty as a subject in this book?
I was interested in looking into a competitive sport. And so I actually also interviewed a triathlete, because I know that's a lot of the ways that we can get outside is if we maybe join a 5K race or, you know, get on our bikes and do some kind of racing thing. And I actually didn't really know what BMX bike racing was. Poor Miss Kitty. I thought it was when you did tricks off each little jump and you had to do like a twist or even a flip. But turns out, thank goodness, that's not what you do. You just go around a race course, which has steep turns and what they call rollers.
And I love this moment in the book where you bring up the jumps and flips and she says to you, you watch too much TV.
Yeah, Miss Kitty is an educator. She's been an educator all her life and she was a school principal. And that really, really comes out because she has so much wisdom that she drops kindly on you a lot. And so I really enjoyed so much spending the day with her.
I want to hear about your experience. Was this an intimidating sport for you to get into at the end? How did your view of BMX racing change?
Yeah, I don't really love competitive sports, mostly because even though I do a lot of outdoor activities, I'm not super athletic per se. I'm just sort of dogged. So I need some time to work at something in order to be good at it. So I was going to do a day of training and then I was going to race later that afternoon. And Miss Kitty actually enlisted a 12-year-old at the time, Lucy Cook, Lucy Tough Cookie Cook. Is her race name is Tough Cookie. And because as Miss Kitty pointed out, is that really BMX biking is a generational sport. Like all generations were there during the race, but not just racing in their specific age groups, but actually intermingling. And so Miss Kitty said, you know, kids teach really well. So she wanted Lucy to take me around the track a couple times. Now, Lucy was so nice to me because I was pretty terrible at this sport, but she was super encouraging and, you know, taught me how to go around the curve and take the rollers. And so by the time the day was kind of ending and the race itself was about to begin, I turned out I was actually in a race with Miss Kitty and Lucy Cook because there just aren't that many women. And our bike class really only consisted of the three of us. So a 12-year-old, and I was 57 at the time, and then 74-year-old Miss Kitty, we all raced together. And it goes without saying that Lucy creamed us. And Miss Kitty let me pass her because she didn't really want to tangle with a beginner like me. So she just let me pass her. And it was really interesting because she's this blend of hyper competitive for sure, but also really has a sense of why she's on the track, which is for herself. So she basically just let me pass her all three times, all three heats.
And as we mentioned, Kitty Westenauer will join us later in the hour. I wanted to ask for those who are seeking a new adventure, who want a new outdoor adventure, you give a huge range of different activities that they could try. What to you is a good entry point or advice for people on how to find an entry point?
Well, you know, the base jumper, Sean Brokman, is actually a personal trainer. And she told me that when she trains women who haven't been outside in a long time and feel very unconfident about their place in the outdoors, she asks them, like, what did you do as a kid? What really spoke to you then? And often that's a really nice entry point. But what I say is really go slow. If it's just a walk in the park, that's really important because walking is movement. And I found a lot of research that talked about in depth how important and medicinal it is simply to be outside from the tree chemicals that are emitted by trees that help our immune system, to birdsong, which calms our brains and lowers our blood pressure, basically people that go on a walk and are tested afterwards for their do really, really much better on their cognitive and memory tests after a walk outside. So you want to get into as much green space as possible, but any green space will do.
And for that element of excitement, is that an important element for people to seek in their later years?
The way I define adventure, and again, I had to be, this book is a quest of my own to find out about my own fulfilling aging. And I really had to look closely at what adventure offers. And really what it is your own sense of exhilaration, your own boundaries being comfort zone being pushed just a little, your own sense of exploration, and your own physical vitality, wherever you are physically and financially. Mm-hmm. So one of the things that I looked into that surprised me is this concept of awe. So getting outside in any way is really an attitudinal thing. When you go outside and you look around during your activity with wonder, sort of fresh childlike eyes, you activate this concept called awe, which turns out is really good for us. Mm-hmm. And so awe is basically that feeling. I mean, a lot of people just had it with the eclipse, but you can access it by looking up at the night sky. Mm-hmm. You can access it by looking at the Grand Canyon, but you can also access it by just going outside and looking closely at things. That's why bird watching is so beautiful. And mm-hmm. again, simply taking a walk. So that sense of wonder, a little bit of fear, maybe a little bit of dread in the presence of something bigger than you, that's mm-hmm. awe. And they found that awe not only lowers your inflammation markers, which is a sign of ill health, it lowers your anxiety and your depression, and it ups your gratitude and your compassion. And so when we go outside and access exhilaration, exploration, and that sense of wonder and awe, we're really doing ourselves a favor in our later years.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, that's not something that you have to get into extreme sports to experience. But in the book, you talk about a key moment that you realized later was awe took place while you were wing walking. First, could you explain for listeners who don't know what wing walking is, and then bring us to that moment that you later realized was a moment of awe?
I went wing walking because I was sent a video and I saw what turned out to be 71-year-old Cynthia Hicks in a biplane flying, and then suddenly she climbs up on the wing of the flying biplane. And I realized I had to interview her. And mm-hmm. I was interested in how a one-time activity maybe triggers our neural system, makes us feel alive. So I wanted to see what she said about it. And she told me, Caroline, you wouldn't believe the sense of courage you get when you first get up on that wing. So I thought, oh, I'm going to have to go wing walking. Now, wing walking is something we don't do anymore, but it's from the barnstorming days of the 1920s when biplanes would do aerobatics and go from town to town. And that one of the things they'd do is have a wing walker is basically someone who gets on the wing. And they would do tricks like go from one flying plane to another flying plane, or even a moving car on the ground to a flying plane. But that is not what you do when you go to the one wing walking place that still exists here in the United States. And it's basically, nobody really is a wing walker. You just kind of do wing walking, again, to sort of experience this. Mostly, I guess, people think they're going for adrenaline. So I went and took this class. And, you know, they teach you how to get up on the wing while you're on the ground. And basically, they told me, no, you don't really need to do anything. You need to just do these series of moves over and over again. And I said, but what happens at 3,000 feet in the air? And they're like, don't worry about it. Your body will take over. It'll be fine. And so at 3,000 feet in the air, in the biplane, I got up off my seat. And by the way, I was not happy about this because I am a pilot and I don't like getting out of perfectly good cockpits. But I wanted to do this for the book and find this sense of courage. And I got up on the wing. I was a terrible wing walker, by the way. I sort of was a wing crawler, a wing slitherer. And I make my way to the king post in the center of the plane, and I strap myself in. And then the pilot begins to do loops, barrel rolls, and hammerheads. And I went from being the surliest wing walker to ecstatic. And when I got back on the ground, I was really curious about this because, you know, I was very well versed in adrenaline. And yes, there was mm-hmm. adrenaline. Yes, I guess bravery was part of it, like Cynthia had told me. But there was something else going on. And what I realized, what I had experienced was awe. So, but let me assure you that you do not have to wing walk to feel awe. And in fact, I found a study here in San Francisco where they asked people between the ages of 60 and 80 to go on walks for 15 minutes a day over an 8-week period, and simply to look at things with fresh childlike eyes. And they monitored these, they called them awe walkers, for 8 weeks. And they found that their inflammatory markers went way down. That's a sign of ill health. And their anxiety and depression went way down. And they self-reported feeling more compassion and gratitude. And so what this shows is that this is really important for us as we age, obviously, all those aspects, and that you do not have to wing walk. You simply have to access awe in yourself. And of course, nature is a really, it's basically, they call it an awe trigger, because it's easy to feel awe in nature. And oh, here's the other thing, which I didn't really realize, but scientists, well, first of all, they call awe a reset button for the brain because it makes us also more open-minded. Actually, I think on a neural level, we've kind of blown our, we can't really place, like when I was on that wing, I couldn't really understand what was going on mid-loop. My brain was like, what's going on? I think you're going to die. And yet another part of my brain's like, nah, I mean, you did this yourself and you're tied in. And that pilot's really good. You're okay. But my neural system did not know how to process this. And I think what scientists say is when that happens, that sense of awe where you can't quite figure out what's going on, that makes you more open-minded. And so it turns out that we live in a world of anti-awe devices. So the phone and our computer screen, that narrows our vision. It doesn't widen it. And it also makes us feel very powerful and in control, the opposite of awe. And those things are actually not that great for us. So to counter all the anti-awe devices in our life now, I think it's really important that we go outside.
Yeah. And this has me thinking about bird watching. And what you talk about in your book is that it's not just about getting outside and walking, but paying attention and being present is an important part of that.
Yeah, it's hard for us to learn. I think, though, that when you go outside, there's an ease to that. So all these things, like going outside is so good for us. And the beauty of it is that we don't have to sort of gird ourselves and be like, now I'm going to do something really good for me. I'm going to make sure that I pay deep attention and I'm going to, you know, make sure I take deep breaths for those tree chemicals. It's like seamless, because the other aspect of an outdoor activity is that you're having fun. And you're often with people that you like in a medium where there's this deep connection going on. And I think Miss Kitty will back that up, that there is this, again, this deep sort of sense of belonging. Maybe if you ask the boogie boarders, they wouldn't say that there's necessarily, that if they look back at their boogie boarding, they realize like, okay, so how important is it really to be playing in the waves? But on a deep sort of sensory level, they're connected to the people around them. They're helping them have fun too. And they're both like feeling, they're all like feeling this physical vitality. And it's a very bonding experience. And we need that as we age.
If you just joined us, I'm speaking with New York Times bestselling author Caroline Paul. Her latest book is Tough Broad. In it, she advocates for women getting outdoors and adventuring, no matter their age. I'm not yet the target audience for this book, but I still took so much from it because I think aging anxiety for women starts pretty young. What advice do you have for women in their 20s and 30s as they think about aging and their futures?
Well, all I can tell you is that the women that I interviewed who were older than me all told me, and including my own mom, by the way, who's also in the book, they told me that their 60s was their favorite decade. So there's a lot really to look forward to. And it makes total sense, because when we're in our 60s, we have this, there's been a big change in our life. Often the kids are no longer in the house. We're maybe at the top of our career. We have hormonally change. We're menopausal, so our extreme caregiving hormones have now changed, and instead of going outward to other people, they now have turned more towards us. There's a freedom and a sort of openness, because yes, the culture doesn't really give us an identity at this point, except for maybe grandmother, if you have grandkids. But if you don't, there's not really a slot for women in their 60s to sort of there are not a lot of role models to say, this is how I'm going to live my life. And in some ways, that's really difficult. But in some ways, it's kind of beautiful, because now it's open for you to decide.
Right. And you've mentioned throughout this conversation that this book is about kind of self-discovery for you, for how you feel about your own aging. After finishing it, how did your view of aging change?
I mean, I had always had a pretty good view of aging because my own mother had blossomed as she hit 40, then 50, and then 60. And I watched this as her child and didn't give her a lot of credit for it, of course, because I was her kid. But I was still very affected by the messaging that we get that says our aging journey is simply going to be, is going to narrow our life. And I think when I went and saw the wide breadth of opportunity that we can have in the outdoors and how powerful it is, because I didn't know any of this science. I had a very, you know, sort of general sense that I liked who I was when I went outside and had an adventure, but I didn't realize, you know, the studies that have backed me up on this that say when you go outside and upend who you think you are and what you can do, and also add community, novelty, purpose, and such physical vitality, how important that was.
Caroline, thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you, Danny. It's super fun.
Caroline Paul is the author of Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. She'll be at Beaverdale Books April 16th at 6:30 p.m. with Iowan and the oldest female BMX racer in the country, Kitty Weston-Nauer. After the break, I'll be joined by Miss Kitty. It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News.
This IPR podcast is supported by Cultivating Compassion, the Dr. Richard Deming Foundation, fostering causes that enrich the community, generate understanding, and cultivate compassion, including above and beyond cancer.
Back with more Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Danny Gear, filling in for Charity Nebbe. Before the break, I was speaking with author Caroline Paul. Her latest book is called Tough Broad, From Boogie Boarding to Wing Walking, How Outdoor Adventure Improves Our Lives as We Age. The book features Iowa's own Kitty Weston-Nauer. A now retired school principal, Kitty picked up BMX racing at 40 when she was one of two women in the country racing in her age group. She's been racing ever since, and now in her 70s, she's the oldest woman competing on the BMX racing circuit. Last year, she competed in well over 100 races and already has several races under her belt this year. She is in the Des Moines studio now. Hello, Kitty.
Good morning. Good morning, Danny. How are you?
Great. So great to hear from you. And thank you so much for taking the time. Now, Charity Nebbe has interviewed you on this program before, but I do want to go back. Can you retell how you started BMX racing?
Well, as a family, and when I say family, it was my husband and older son, and I raced. Youngest son did not, as he was autistic and wouldn't ride a bike. Mm-hmm. So we had already been involved in a number of rag brides. Little Max did his first one at age 7. A friend of his from school said, Max, why don't you come out to the BMX track? And Max was about 8, maybe going on 9. Because they knew he loved riding bicycles. So my husband Max and son Max raced. I'm standing on the sidelines at the races that I would go to, telling them, little Max especially, Max, how come you didn't put your foot down when you went around that turn? Max, how come you didn't pedal a little harder in that area of the track? Max, how come? Max, why didn't you? When that young man turned 11, he said to me, Mom, if you think this is so easy, why don't you try it? Now, mind you, I had never, ever raced BMX, had never been on a BMX bike. Yes, I raced road bikes and I raced mountain bikes, but never BMX. So on Mother's Day of 1988, I put on Max's helmet, which was too small for my head. I had this huge afro and I stuffed all my air into it. I put on Max's gloves, which were too small for me. And I got on his little 20-inch bike. Now, that was too small for me also. I entered the race with other mothers because technically that was the only time they would race. Now, I did not win that race, but I had a whole new appreciation for the sport of BMX. And I said to my husband, I'm going to start racing. And, of course, you know, he looks at me and goes, okay. Son was a little apprehensive at first, but that became our lives. We went from track to track. We had 7 tracks in Iowa at the time, and we raced also over in Nebraska and up in Minnesota and to the east of us in Illinois, to the south of us in Minnesota, doing just the local races. Did that for a number of years, at least I was, because Lil Max now was really good at this sport and moving up in rank. So not only were we racing locally, but we were now going to nationals and we were going to Gold Cups and other forms of races that had me competing against other men. Because in my age class, there was only one other woman, and we did not live near one another. Mm-hmm. So that was my introduction to the sport of BMX that I am currently still participating in.
What about BMX do you think hooked you?
Oh, my goodness. There were a number of things. First of all, new learning. I would say to my students all the time, you need to learn something new every day. And I'm not just not talking about schoolwork. I'm talking about life. What can you learn about yourself? What do you learn about others? The camaraderie amongst the racers. You know, I'm just not there with my age class of men, but there are kids there. Even the women who were standing along the fence were there, and I was always encouraging them. But the idea that you were learning something new, not only about yourself, but about the sport of BMX. No two tracks are the same. And so you practiced before a race, you learned about that track. One of the things I always did was I would walk a track before I even put my bike on it. And people would say, well, why would you do that? And I wasn't the only one. There were others out there. I wanted to get a feel. I wanted my feet to feel that track. Get a sense of what I would have to do to be competitive on that track with others. But also to understand, wow, this track is really technical. Or, oh, you know what? This is a nice track for an older woman to get out on and compete. You're going to be okay, kitty.
And I've seen you say in the past that even with a track you regularly practice on for years, you seem to learn something new about it each time.
I still do. Yes, wow. Indeed. You better believe it. And that's what I call, that's the thing about, you know, as you age, you want to continue to be a learner. I am a lifelong learner, and I am still learning, even as I'm 75 going on 76. Mm-hmm. And that's critical.
And I understand, you know, parents of riders or other spectators, you like to go and encourage them to get into the action. Tell me a bit about these recruitment efforts.
Well, here's the thing. When I became involved in this sport, girls typically quit racing after they graduated from high school or when they turned 18. So there was really no encouragement from our sanctioning bodies to have young ladies continue racing. And I found that to be kind of strange, honestly. I do spend time at every track I go to having conversations with girls and women about, hey, come on out here. Mom, you come to the practices of your even son and daughter, but you don't come out and race. And there were always these excuses about why they didn't get involved. And, you know, I'm looking at them and I'm thinking, yes, I am older. But I'm looking at them and thinking, but why not? This is a sport that really connects you with other people. Even with your own child. You know, my son was my best teacher. Young people are great at helping you better understand what this sport is about. You know, I found myself listening to what son Max was saying about, you know, racing. I said, Lil, I said less and less to him about what he should, ought to, and need to be doing, because now I'm in that position of what I should, ought to, and need to be doing. And over the years, I have encouraged other women. Mind you, there were no women's cruiser classes. That's with the 24, 26, 29-inch wheel bicycle. There were men classes, and I actually raced age-wise in my class with the men. The other thing, the joy that it brings you. And over the years, I've been telling women, never ever let anyone steal your joy. Hmm. Why is it so joyful? Not only the learning that takes place, but you are physically in the moment when you are out on a BMX track. I have to stay healthy. Whoa, that's not something I had really thought about before. It had always been about my husband and my sons. But now I had an even greater reason to say, Miss Kitty, guess what? You are now going to have this opportunity to really engage your mind and your body in an activity. Because, see, now I'm running with the men. Now, I grew up with five brothers. And so anything that they could do, I could do better. Mm. And this came back to me from my childhood, because I was always competing against, some of my brothers were older, some of my brothers were younger. But there were more advantages for boys and men in mm-hmm. my growing up back in the 50s and the 60s. Now, we're on an equal playing field, because I had to, in terms of my racing, I had to step up my game, and it gave me pause to be able to do that.
Wow. So what do you think people's reservations are when they, particularly women, when they think about getting into BMX?
Minds have been changing over the decades. Now, how do I know that? Because we have more girls and women involved in the sport. Our sanctioning bodies agreed that, you know, we need to include the women. After all, they're there. The other thing is, even though I'm still talking to some of the same women I talked to years ago, they are not as reticent about, well, you know, maybe this is something I can do. Now, trust me, there are still those women who say, no, I'm never going to do it. But you see a change in the mindset. And now I have women and girls, and there are guys, too, who come to me and tell me, you know, you are the reason that I'm out here racing now. You helped me to see and understand. Not only is this fun, but I look at you as you have grown older over the years. Mind you, I wasn't even 40 when I started. So we're talking about 35 years in a sport that was predominantly male at its inception. And what that says to me is that we continue to be, and we must be, all inclusive. But it also gives me an opportunity to have conversations with women and girls in a way that didn't happen 30 years ago, mm-hmm. much less 35 years ago. So, yeah.
And, you know, for most of the hour, I was talking with Caroline Paul about her book, Tough Broad, which features you, and it focuses on the benefits of outdoor recreation, especially mm-hmm. as we age. How do you think this sport has benefited you?
Well, I have severe osteoarthritis. It was discovered when I was in my 20s. I had to give up the running, which I love. Now, I also was riding bikes, but I also enjoyed running. I had to stop cold turkey with the running because of the issues with my joints, my hips, my knees, even my feet, and then my poor back. So what has happened is I was able to transform from one sport to another, that continues to keep me healthy. Yes, I've had a few setbacks. I did have to have both my hips and knees replaced due to arthritis. My hands are crippling. And my hand surgeon even said to me, "Kitty, how much longer are you going to be racing?" And I told him, my hands will determine that. Because when you can no longer grip that bike like you should, then you know you're not going to continue to do that. Because you want to be safe, not just for yourself, but for your competitors. So it's not all about me. It's about we and thee. The other thing, though, and I've had two back surgeries because, you know, as you age, your body begins to shrink. Anyone with arthritis will tell you it is and can be crippling. But I haven't let that get in the way. And then the other thing was, in 93, I had a devastating accident while trying to jump doubles. I did a header on my bike and tumbled off my bike, broke my neck. It was a C4-5 cord syndrome, the same type of accident that Christopher Reeves, who played Superman, had. And I wasn't even in Des Moines when I did this, but I had to be transported back to Des Moines. And that occurred on a Wednesday. The accident happened on a Sunday. Transported back to Des Moines on a Wednesday where I met the neurosurgeon who, standing on one side of my bed, my husband on the other side, said to my husband across me, "You know, I don't think your wife realizes that she may never regain full use of her arms and legs," because I had been paralyzed from the shoulders down. And I piped up. Now, mind you, I've got this collar on my neck. I haven't even had surgery yet, and I can't see from one side to the other. And I, you know what? I told him, "No, I'm going to do this." And my husband said, "Oh, you don't know my wife."
And you were back on the track 6 months later.
Yes, I was. Because I said I was going to walk out of that hospital, I was going to get back to the shape I was in health-wise that I was before the accident, and I was going to use this accident as a means of helping my students understand you never, ever let someone tell you what you can and cannot do.
And you maintain that energy as you...
I still do, yes, ma'am.
As you continue on, and you've done several races already this year, right?
Oh, my goodness, I have. I've already, this is 24, I've already completed 24 races.
Wow. Well, Kitty, thank you for fitting us in between all those races. Thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome, and thank you, Danny.
Kitty Westenauer is a retired Des Moines principal and the oldest female BMX racer in the country. I'm Danny Gear. This episode was produced by Sam McIntosh with help from Maddie Willis and Kate Perez. This is Talk of Iowa from IPR News.